Josh, please.
Thank you very much. Some of the best lines have already been sown, but here we go. I'm a social scientist. I've worked for more than 30 years with agricultural scientists and extension and advisory services, mainly in South Asia, China, and Sub-Saharan Africa. I'm a former professor of human ecology at the Swedish Agricultural University and currently at Wageningen. I was a lead author in the world's most comprehensive assessment of agricultural knowledge, science, and technology that's ever been conducted. Admittedly, it had some flaws. The UK government was a very powerful supporter of this. It reported last year at the intergovernmental session mid-year, and it involved the private sector, civil society organizations, researchers such as myself, and UN and government agencies. I'm also recently reported to the Standing Committee on Agricultural Research of the EU, the second foresight exercise, where we scanned innumerable documents to see what different authorities and experts had to say, and came up with some fairly startling conclusions, which I hope to be able to share with you this afternoon. Okay. Some opening statements. That meeting the goal of supplying nutritious food for all in an environmentally and socially sustainable manner is, from where I stand, achievable, even up to 2050. But it's also equally clear that it can't be achieved through current agricultural business as usual scenarios. We must recognize this as our starting point. And one of the reasons is that agriculture and food systems are not just an industry like any other. And very briefly to summarize, it's the world's largest industry, covering over 40% of the world's land surface, and in terms of the number of farmers directly engaged. It is a highly asymmetrical industry. Less than 1% of the farming community farms over 100 hectares. Most of the food that is produced is not traded internationally, although we give a lot of emphasis to food trade. And our export surplus is dependent on very few countries and production areas, which under climate change scenarios will be increasingly vulnerable to weather-related disruptions. There's intense concentration throughout the value chain, starting with the provision of modern inputs, fertilizers, agrochemicals, through to commodity trading, food processing, and down to the retail sector. And this near-monopoly control would not be allowed in any other industrial sector, and it is raises concerns both because of that concentration of power, but because, and most importantly, it closes the innovation space through which solutions to our current and future challenges will have to be met. And this in itself is a source of risk. It's also an industry where, unusually, farmers pay, on the whole, retail prices for their inputs and wholesale prices for their outputs. Not in itself a resilient and sustainable practice. It is one of the major contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, particularly from the livestock sector, and as you all know, it's likely that the demand for meat products will increase in the near future. And it is a major contributor to natural resource degradation. For example, in South Africa, it has no more surplus water. Its dilution capacity for agricultural pollution is exhausted, which means that nutrient and other pollutions from agriculture, both in the small scale and in the highly advanced modern sector, are now concentrating in South Africa's water system, which is producing unprecedented rates of eutrophication that's resulting from nutrient flows, and whole new range of problems for which we have no scientific grip whatsoever, such as mycocystins, which are extremely hazardous for human health. And more and more parts of the world are heading in very close to the same kind of threshold. If we look ahead, what are the increasing constraints likely to be? Water has been mentioned, and this is certainly of intense concern, but also phosphorus. We have no substitute for phosphorus. We have known stocks. We have, as far as we can tell, not much prospect of finding more. They're concentrated in a few countries, not all of them in politically stable parts of the world. And of course, if we're going to do something about climate change, we need to enter into a more carbon-constrained agriculture and food system. And agriculture is also the only industry which has direct impacts on human health through the food chain. We've reached a perverse situation where those dependent on purchasing food actually are among the most obese and most liable to diabetes. This is entirely perverse and not necessary, but is a direct result of how current agriculture and food systems are organized. There's three things I would like to share with you this afternoon on trade, price, and centrally the role of agricultural science and technology in finding a way forward. I don't want to go into detail now, but just to give you a few quick highlights, because I realize we're taking a long time here. I'm sure my trade colleagues will say more about non-reciprocal access and special treatment and so on within the Doha round, but I'd like to draw attention to the need for trade economists and trade negotiators to become a lot better informed about the technical risks of food trade and commodity trade in a climate-changing world. The insect vectors, pests and diseases are moving extremely fast and changing their populations extremely fast, and we have, frankly, no grip whatsoever over what they might do within the next 20, 30 years. How serious this is, we might consider. French West Africa, for example, has only two ecotoxicology labs. It cannot control these risks within the current institutional provisions. And many other countries similarly have extremely weak phytosanitation and food safety provisions, which will not allow them to deal with the transmission of these pests and diseases and as vector populations change. We can certainly expect more extreme and more frequent weather disruptions. We only have to see the impact that this year already the drought in China's wheat-producing area will certainly have on wheat prices and therefore affect consumers here also in the UK, let alone poor consumers in developing countries, to realise how extremely dangerous this is, also in terms of geopolitical stability. China has, 20 million people unemployed as a result of the economic crash? Add in food scarcity at the same time and you have a very serious problem that threatens all our interests. If we move significantly towards deriving part of our energy supply from biomass fuel, even with second and third generation technologies, we will inevitably link energy prices and food prices together, increasing volatility. On pricing, we simply are making decisions on false price signals. Our pricing systems at the moment simply do not capture the full social and ecological costs of production, which means that it's driving innovation in agriculture and food in very perverse directions that, frankly, are not sustainable. So we have to continue to work at a very technical level to figure out how we can get into our pricing, financial systems, economic thinking, something that does a better job so we can make better informed decisions. On AKST, I want to say, frankly, there's a complete, although there's a large appreciation of the need to reinvest public support into vastly expanded agricultural knowledge, science and technology across the board within Europe, between Europe and developing countries and within responsibility of developing countries themselves, the near monopolies in the current food and agricultural system are closing the space for innovation, making decisions on AKST, if I can use the shorthand, that focus very much on maintaining short-term profitability over longer-term issues of public value and resilience. And we have to find a way through this. My colleagues in the commercial sector talk about within the next few decades of achieving total life mastery by bringing together genomics, robotics, nanotechnology, which is already widely circulating in the European space in agriculture and food, entirely unregulated, I should add, cognitive sciences and information and communication technologies. The question is, who controls this and for what purpose is it deployed? And until we get a grip on that, we're likely to have some perverse outcomes. It also, at the purely technical level, raises some very serious issues. And we can, I come from the Netherlands, we're very proud of our AKST. We will soon build the first pig flat, multi-story, totally closed pig production units, which can capture heat and waste and feed the energy on to other industries. Mega dairies, 2,000 dairy herds, again within totally closed systems, seems on the surface to offer a lot of advantages, takes agriculture off the land. The first meat, I don't know, maybe we need a new word, but anyway, meat products from fermentation means that we'll enter the food chain in Europe probably this year, which means again that a lot of economists are very excited. We have lots of lovely farmland. We can devote it to nature, meet our obligations under European law for ecology. Tourism, recreation, much more profitable than farming, and infrastructure and housing, and isn't this wonderful? Problem is, you move a cow out of eating grass, it drinks 3 to 4 litres of water a day. You move it into a mega dairy eating dry food stuff, it demands maybe 10, 11 litres a day. There is an absolute constraint of how we can shuffle around the biological commons here, and we have to get a lot smarter. The other direction is to move very smartly towards building well-informed mosaics across the landscape of that are resilient biologically, that diversify, and that offer flexible options for the way forward in an increasingly uncertain response arena, as it will be under climate change. I can go into the very strong options there. Conservation agriculture is already up and running, but still covers only 5% of world's agriculture. It's been adapted for systems around the world. Agroforestry offers huge potential both to meet climate mitigation and adaptation goals, as well as food producing and restoration of natural ecosystems. Robotics probably has a strong role to play also in developing countries. Cheap, usable, alert systems that can provide feedback on where fertilizer is needed, where pests and diseases really need to be addressed. The government of India, which has adopted integrated pest management as its standard option for crop protection, drawing in both modern commercial products and farmer-based management of risks. It has a very vibrant information technology sector, is simply distributing small digital units to even illiterate farmers to record pest and disease dynamics and feeding that back to central monitoring. The alert function of science can be provided for so that we don't get caught by surprise, even in small holding systems, if we go the agro-ecological route. So,
that's a big question. Yeah. Really appeals. I'd like to have people who really have been through it and thought it more than